Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 167. This is a show about Linux. We cover all sorts of Linux topics, whether it's hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoob, and I am joined by my good friend, as always, the Linux Maven, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Door-to-Door Geek. How's it going, Door?
Good. I hope you're doing good well. But I gotta say, it's absolutely, I guess the wrong word is ironic, but I don't care. Ironic, you say tickle your Linux fancy. Mm-hmm. With today we have a guest known as the Giggling Death, right?
Yeah, that doesn't really rhyme, though. Tickling, giggling,
well, it's pushing. One, no. One starts the other. It's cyclical.
Yes. Yeah,
fair enough.
And that's what I'm leaning on.
And by our guest, I have to say, it's about time that we have had some nightmare fuel on this show. Pedro Mateus from Linux Gamecast is here. Pedro, how's it going today, man?
Hey, it's cool. Thanks for having me on the show. I mean, you guys, I've actually been listening to your podcast a hell of a lot longer than I've been on LGC, so...
And you still came on?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, now I'm shocked.
Oh, cool.
Well, he just dropped a whole bunch of papers.
Now we're members of the Mutual Admiration Society, so that's very cool.
Yeah, well, I have to throw this out here absurdly, Pedro. From the first time I saw the words combined Linux Gamecast, literally, I want to say like the first week after I joined Google Plus, I have been wanting to do nothing more than back you guys up, get the show more popular, get more people watching the show, and to be God's honest, hopefully making you guys some sort of affiliate money, if even possible, to get you off a frigging calculator.
Yeah, I spent almost a year without a job, so yeah, money's a bit tight right now, and we would very much appreciate it, me specifically. But yeah, you guys... Let's be honest here. You guys wanted Ven on the show, not me. Well, Ven sort of volunteered me.
Well, I'll say I instinctively ask Ven first because he is the main host of the show, and I bow to his suggestions. Just so happy he didn't suggest Jordan. Oh my lord.
Well, yeah, that was my stipulation. It's like as long as it's not Jordan, I'm fine.
So here's a couple questions I have for you, Pedro. How many shows has LGC had? And if I'm not mistaken, you were not on from episode one, were you?
No, I was not. The first episode I appeared in was episode 23, then I only appeared in episode 25, and then 27, then every single one from there on in, save for a couple of few that I had to miss. But yeah, we've had a total of 109 episodes so far.
That's fantastic, man.
Yeah. And we, you know, tooting the LGC bagpipe here, we have... reached an average of 25,000 audio downloads just for the audio of our podcast, so we're kind of happy about that. It's really awesome. Chat Realm is growing.
I'm sure. Now, for anyone that is not baptized yet, I will say LGC is not a completely family-free show.
No. I mean, if you ask Jordan, we're totally family-friendly. We have, a million moms have us on their watch list.
Right.
There might be 8-second increments in a single show that might be family friendly, but I'm not sure about the rest of it.
Here's the thing. If you worked in tech at any point in your life, like software development or hardware, anything, you're probably used to cussing and swearing and everything the sort.
A lot.
And yeah, we don't shy away from that. We respect that some people don't like it. We respect that, and we don't want those people watching our show because, hey, you're not our target audience. Sorry about that.
Exactly. And the way I think of it is, here's one of the main reasons I liked LGC. When I first talked to Ven years ago, there was no doubt in my mind. He always said exactly what he felt. There was never any cushioning. There was never any softening. There was never any, well, I don't know if I should say that kind of attitude. To me, the language is accompanied by honesty, brutal honesty, to when a game is deserving of being talked down upon, it seems like you do. And you do well.
Let's face it. Let's face it, as much as I'd love to say that there are a bunch of great Linux games on Steam, there aren't really all that many. I mean, less than 100 are actually genuinely good games. Everything else is crap.
Right. Well, and I think it's safe to say, I wouldn't say you guys are elitist when it comes to gaming, but I will say you all three of you seem very experienced on games. Thus, you hold the bar a little bit higher than I think the average folk. And to be honest, I like having someone more knowledgeable about games telling me what is good and what is bad about games. So then it educates me on what to look at.
It's not just that. I mean, everyone's played games at this point. I don't know about you guys, but I personally grew up with was the Atari 2600, Commodore 64, then a Sega Master System 2, then the Mega Drive, then the Saturn, then I changed to the PlayStation, PlayStation 2, PSP, then I kind of stopped buying consoles, and I've been a PC gamer ever since. But yeah, everyone's played games at some point in their lives. Some people don't really care for what the games actually offer. It's just, oh, it's something to pass the time, and they don't really care to these so-called casual gamers.
Yeah.
They don't look that in depth to it or really analyze it. They're just like, I'm just analyzing the bank. I don't really care.
It's just something to sink some free couple of minutes on. The mobile market at this point is perfect for those kinds of people.
Indeed.
But yeah, if you want to, now that I think about it, Steam's kind of riddled with Android game ports. But yeah, that aside, I actually like games personally a hell of, you know, a lot more than most people out there. And I guess at one point, it was 2006, if I'm not mistaken. I saw one of the magazines, actual printed magazines that I used to read, had a freelance job offer for a reviewer slash critic. And I'm like, okay, I'll apply. So I chose a game, I think it was Fallout 2 back then, and I wrote a critique of Fallout 2. And all things considered, Fallout 2 is my favorite all-time game.
Oh, yes.
So I wrote it. I actually got the so-called freelance part. And for 2 years, I wrote critiques for a ton of games until the magazine actually eventually went out of business because it was print. It was dying.
Yeah, and it wasn't your reviews that put the magazine out of business, I'm sure.
No. In fact, most of my reviews actually got pretty good feedback from what the editor-in-chief told me.
And to be honest, that's one of the things I honestly like about the show is each host has something else to offer. And what you offer, to be honest, is at least a little bit of credibility. You've actually done this job. Most people just do it for fun. This was your livelihood.
Yeah. For almost 2 years, I actually made a reasonable amount of money. Again, I was in university, tuition, housing, all that. There wasn't a whole lot left, but it paid the bills. It kept the light on. So, and like Van actually likes to call it, the shred of credibility in the LGC reviews is the fact that I actually worked for I wrote for a games magazine. So, yeah. But yeah, it's Van and Jordan themselves never really worked for a games company, but Jordan has actually played a ton of games. Van decided that he wanted to make Linux gaming an actual thing, and he made it his mission, and that's where Linux Gamecast came from. We give you the cold hard truth when it comes to reviewing games and all, you know, reviewing games and our opinion regarding certain other subjects, even if they're only tangentially related to Linux gaming. Some people don't like that.
Well, and here's the thing I really like about you guys is that Your whole show is really built around as if I was sitting there with you and we had about 10 beers and you just let it all out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The
it's kind of the point.
the brutal honesty, and you don't see that in a lot of game reviews. Like, if traditionally, if you're talking about like normal magazine, and even, you know, like some of the bigger online sites, they're going to give it a 7 if they think it's garbage. Or they just give it a slightly lower score, you know what I mean? Or it's like 3 stars out of 5, whereas you guys, I mean, we'll get to your own unique way of grading the games in a moment, but I do love your brutal honesty, and one of the things that I really like to hear you guys do, and this is something that maybe not a lot of gamers who are trying to game on Linux know about, but it's the fact that you constantly rake developers over the coals for doing the Linux Kickstarter bait and switch.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you speak about that for a second?
Yeah, we do, and it's... Yeah, sure. It's not so much the bait and switch. That is more when a developer promises something and then the game shows up on Steam and it's like pre-order for Windows and Linux. And I'm not naming names here. Metro Redux. But yeah, it's pre-order Windows and Linux. Okay, so you look at the page and you see a release date. Just a 1. And you think, okay, so they're going to be out at the same time. You buy the game, or you pre-order the game in this case, and then when it's finally released, it's Windows only. That didn't sit very well with us, but what you're referring to is actually the Kickstarter Linux stretch goals. That, we don't like that. We don't like that at all. No one likes that, at least people that actually use Linux as an everyday operating system, not just as a hobby.
Right.
Which is, again, we like to call ourselves entitled because it's the elitism thing that Steven was talking about earlier. It's, we're not elitists. We have nothing against people who dual boot. I mean, to each their own. But if dual booters come into a Linux discussion thread claiming that the Linux port, it's better than it's later, or the at least we should be thankful that there's any Linux support at all when it comes to the stretch goals. At that point, I just want to reach in to my monitor and slap someone across the face. Because why are you boycotting or undermining, that's the word, why are you undermining a platform that you yourself use when you could be asking for the same quality and the same service that Windows users are getting?
Yes.
And then there's the Linux stretch goals themselves, which to us are complete bull honky. Namely, mostly Unity games.
Right.
You see a Unity game go up on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, whatever. Oh, we're going to... port to PC, Mac, and iOS or Android. And people start asking, ah, what about Linux? Oh, that's a stretch goal. When we get like $10,000 above the... You're doing a Unity game. Why? You're already developing in a multi-platform engine.
Right.
Why are you asking for extra money?
I think Ven raked a developer over the coals like that, saying, yes, it is very difficult going to export and selecting the third option as opposed to the first two.
Yes. You simply do not push the export button.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's one of the things, to be honest, I thank you guys. You guys educated me on the fact that Unity I saw at the beginning of some games when it loaded, but I didn't really understand what it was. Thanks to you guys, I understand it's a game development engine that when you utilize properly, the export process to other platforms is just a click, and it works.
It is. Yeah, and you again, you don't even need Unity to do that. If you start developing a game truly multi-platform with multi-platform tools like, say, SDL2, which more people need to start using, they really do.
Can I ask you, what is SDL?
SDL is Simple Direct Media Layer. It's an abstraction layer between the game itself and the hardware it will be using. Like, say, here, I got my controller here.
Right.
Unity has its own way of handling input and audio and everything else. But there are some games, like Ogre 3D, for instance, if they want something to handle the media, like music, audio files, textures, input, they use like an abstraction layer, a simple direct media layer, as you were, SDL. And SDL SDL2 right now has the best support when it comes to, you know, game controllers. I have a PS2 DualShock here. It's connected to an adapter to work through USB. And as long as a game has SDL2, that controller works wonderfully. If a game does not use SDL2, that most likely won't work. And it will be a miracle if an Xbox 360 controller, which is the most widely used controller on Linux at this point,
well, yeah, but
if that works too.
If they don't expect you to use one of those two, I don't know what they would think you could use as a game controller. Because to me, everything else in the world is a one-off. All of the third-party manufacturers making their one type of GameCAD controller stick with standards. To me, PS2 or Xbox controllers should be the standard.
Well, but PS2, unless you're buying it, you know, used or secondhand or, God forbid, like 3 times retail price sealed on Amazon, then they are very hard to find. But Pedro is right, and for those of you that are considering delving into PC gaming and you have to have that gamepad, you need to do a little bit of research ahead of time and know that whatever gamepad you have or who you're buying is going to not only work just on Windows plug and play, but on Linux plug and play. Because there is quite a level of frustration when you do plug it in and you realize you have to have special software. But not only that, but if you don't have the software, even if the machine detects it as a USB device, you may have to go in and map each of those input buttons. I'm not even talking all of the eight or 16 directionals. Every single time you boot the game up, unless it has a way to save those, which is awful.
Yeah, and thankfully, nowadays, there's something like the Xbox DRV, which, again, provides a sort of an abstraction layer for games that don't support any other controller other than the Xbox 360. You can literally use Xbox DRV to emulate the 360 controller, regardless of which controller you're using. It's kind of amazing, but it takes some work. And it's not ideal. Some things, I mean, for most games it works, especially Unity games. Those actually recognize the emulated Xbox 360 virtual thing, no problem. But most, still, there's a couple others that still have a problem. But like I was saying, if you start developing a game truly multi-platform with using multi-platform tools like SDL or really anything that supports more than just Windows, at this point, you really have no reason to develop a game just for Windows. I mean, besides the fact that there are over 1.2% of Linux users on Steam, which may not seem like much. 1.2%, what the hell is that? It's a little bit. But when you actually add the numbers, Steam currently has over 75 million active accounts.
Yeah.
1.2% of 75 million is still very close to a million users. Are you really willing to, well, are you arrogant to the point of immediately throwing 1 million possible sales out the window by not supporting Linux?
I wouldn't be.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And again, Valve's been delaying them, but the Steam machines are coming.
Oh, yeah. Now, see, that's what I was going to ask you. Unity is one of the game engines. Valve creates the source engine. Could developers be using the source engine to create cross-platform games? Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's more than a couple of Valve titles that you can play on Linux now.
Yeah, they could. But the source engine is very much proprietary. There are some licensing fees you'd have to pay Valve in order to actually make money off of your game. I don't know exactly what those licensing fees are. It's been a long time since I actually looked into them. But at this point, you shouldn't be looking at the source engine. Gotcha. The source engine is old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very old. Yeah. The last time it was revised, it was for Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which, by the way, is now available on Linux. It starts, but it doesn't play very well yet. It's in very much a beta state, so keep it in mind if you do decide to try it out.
Well, which in itself is very globally offensive.
Yes.
Well, but speaking of old, I'm going to ask you to go really quick over the hardware that you personally use to test the games and what kind of systems do the other guys have?
Yeah, sure. I have a 5-year-old laptop. It's a Toshiba L650. It has a 5650 HD Mobility Radeon.
Oh.
So it's an ATI/AMD card. Yeah. it's got two SSDs in it. It's got 8 gigs of RAM. It was a middle-of-the-road laptop back then, and now it's scratching the bottom. Jordan has an AMD, has a desktop PC with an AMD 6-core processor and a 2 670s overclocked NVIDIAs. Ven has an 8150 8-core processor from AMD. 2 770s. GeForce GTX 770s, yeah. and he has a crazy YOLO raid, as we call it, with a couple of OCZ SSDs. Yeah, Vince PC is like a monster. It's
the beast.
What he uses to render the show, yeah.
He
calls it the Vengeance.
Exactly. Yes. Now, here's my question. Sometimes people ask me about gaming on Linux, which I don't know why they would, but they do. And this is what I think I gather from what happens when you guys load games is I'm thinking hypothetically I could have 10 identical computers with 10 slightly revved video cards or just different video cards, and I could very likely see 10 completely different quality of gameplay. Depends on whether it's, you know, a old ATI, a new ATI, a mid-range ATI, what level of NVIDIA is it? And we could literally see different reactions on all of those boxes. From what I gather, ATI graphics cards for at least games doesn't seem to be the way to go today if I were to build a box.
They aren't. If you're building a box just to play games and do some 3D heavy rendering, which is basically what games do, you really shouldn't be looking at ATI cards or AMD cards. Go with NVIDIA, the NVIDIA GTX 750 Ti. It's stupidly cheap. I mean, $150 and you get something that's equivalent to a GTX 560 or a GTX 480 Ti, which is powered only by the PCI. You don't need the extra 6-pin connector or 8-pin connector, anything. It's just PCI only, and you have a 480, which supports the current generation of graphics. It has a, I'm not sure if it's Kepler or Maxwell chip, but it really kicks a lot of butt when it comes to that.
Gotcha.
And if you do like AMD for some reason, sure, get one of their processors. The 8350 is still one of the best processors, and it right now I think it came down in price just a little bit. It's around the $250 processor, but you get 4 Bulldozer cores with 2 threads each, which actually works a lot better. The AMD's Bulldozer threading actually works a lot better under Linux than Intel's hyperthreading. But Intel's hyperthreading is getting there. They're actually doing a lot of work to improve that, and the new 8-core i7 that they're releasing, it looks tempting.
Yes, I agree. Now, here's the question I wanted to just, and this is a super softball question. Sure. These mystical, magical, unicorn-laden Steam machines are coming. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be like one of the biggest duds in Linux gaming history, or is this going to actually be a potential game changer? Because I keep going in my mind back and forth, and I can't believe it's taken them so long to come out with these things, but two, I personally am not as much of a hardware knowledgeable as basically everybody else in games, but I don't know if they can make it affordable enough and powerful enough to be dangerous.
Yes, they can. You can literally go out right now, build a Steam machine with an NVIDIA GTX 750 Ti, dual-core Intel Pentium something, just 4 gigs of RAM, it's enough. You get maybe an OCZ or a Kingston V300 SSD to get it all running. You get a cheapo EVGA bronze, like 500-watt should be enough power supply. and you have a Steam machine which costs around $400 to build.
Wow.
That's the price of the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Okay.
It's around $400.
Now, I literally heard you guys kind of say that before, so I literally went and looked it up.
Yeah.
I was blown away at how little hardware power I was seeing in comparison to top-end PC gaming machines from these consoles.
The consoles are basically two-year-old laptops. They have Kaveri APUs. I think it's Kaveri's. I'm not sure. But yeah, they have the A10 APUs, which are quad-core APUs with the GPU is actually... Someone ran the comparison on BSD. They ran with the Linux compatibility layer on BSD. They ran what's it called? Unigine Heaven, the benchmark. They ran Unigine Heaven 4, and they tested it against a laptop which had the 5650 HD Radeon, same as mine. And this card is better than that.
Yeah.
Wow. It's better than the ones in the current generation of consoles.
Wow. So so for less than $500, you can literally be competing and beating some of the quality that people are getting out of.
At $500, you can pretty much double or triple the performance when it comes to graphics alone. Processor? Yeah, granted. The APUs are quad cores. They can push a lot of stuff on screen, but graphics alone, yeah, you have the consoles beat because, again, NVIDIA is doing a very good job with their drivers, and the 750 and the 750 Ti are stupidly cheap. Stupidly cheap! They're pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. I just bought a 760 2-3 months ago, and yeah, I was surprised at it.
Yeah.
And I paid a little bit more, just understanding I'm going to use this for a few years. I might as well, you know, bump it up another $30-$50,
yeah,
you know, whatever. And what I'm about to say, I have to preface, I'm a big fan of Steam machines. I can't wait until they get here. I know that they're going to be disruptive, and Dor and I are big fans of disruption because it causes competition. It causes people to think. But the main thing that a lot of people are assuming, well, that are saying, well, it's and you just made this point too, is that the people who really want to take advantage of this, they can just build it now for, you know, pennies. I mean, compared to some of the higher end, I mean, they're gonna have a mid. You know, I'm hoping they're gonna have at least three.
Obviously,
yeah. But yeah. I mean, on top of the 90 or so that have been announced, which may or may not come to market, but we'll see. You know, it's the same thing with all Android tablets, all that stuff. But what I mean, are you currently? And forgive me, I'm behind on my LGC by a few weeks, but I don't have a Windows box to use a SteamOS machine to do the streaming thing. So what would you say right now, if someone did want to try this out? I guess I'm not posing the question correctly here. Let me think for just a second. But
sure.
Basically, I don't want to bash them at all. But what do you think is going to happen? I mean, if you had to forecast it, I mean, are people really going to pounce on this? Because you think the core audience are people who want to use this, could probably have the know-how to go build their own machine anyway. The way I personally see it being really successful is kind of like a Shakespeare Titus Andronicus thing where, you know, they're eating the pie and you ask them, hey, you really like the pie? Like, yeah, I really like the pie. Well, there's Linux in it. And they're just like, oh my God, you know, I never thought I'd use it.
No, here's the thing. Valve is doing away with the Linux stigma by calling it SteamOS.
Right.
That's a non-issue. The droolies that currently play on consoles, they don't care which operating system is working on their machine, so long as it's just fired up. Oh, look, there's my game. I want to play it. They push a button and they're playing it. That's all they want. And that's what Valve is doing. Valve, right now, granted, they delayed the Steam machines. It sucks. But it's what it is. It's Valve. The meme Valve time exists for a reason.
Right.
Yeah. But if you're tech knowledgeable enough to build your own Steam machine and set up SteamOS on it, you can go ahead and do it. They've made every single tool available to you at this point. If you are not tech knowledgeable, you're going to have to wait until they're out. But then again, if you're not tech knowledgeable, you don't really know much about the Steam machines. You've heard of them, probably, but You know nothing about them. And when they do finally hit, they're going to be consoles that are going up against Microsoft and Sony. Microsoft and Sony are the only two major competitors in the market right now. Nintendo's hit a pretty bad spot with the Wii U.
Yeah.
They hit it big with the Wii. The Wii was huge.
Right.
But the Wii U, they're pretty doing pretty bad right now.
You and I could talk for days about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But when the Steam machines do hit, all people are going to see, oh, hey, there's that new Valve console. Let's try that.
Right.
And I didn't try it, and okay, let's bring up a point. It's not a very good point, but it's still a point.
Okay.
In favor of the Steam machines. Do you guys own any of the current generation consoles for you, kids, brothers, sisters?
Nope.
I had both of them. I got rid of them. And then I currently have a few PCs and an Xbox 360 and then a bunch of, you know, legacy classics.
Okay. So your Xbox 360, when you bought it, did you buy it on release or did you buy it a bit later?
Oh, no. This is my third or fourth machine I bought. Knock on wood, I have never had one die, but no, I did not buy it on release.
Yeah. Okay. Imagine, you saw the reports of people in line, thousands and thousands of people in line waiting to buy a PS4, an Xbox One. How many games were actually out for the PS4 and the Xbox One when they were released?
Right. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. No. It was 15 to 20. It was actually. I'm not trying to burn your argument here, but when those two consoles launched, they had the largest number of games available at launch for consoles. Yes, but your point is.
No. But why do they have those many games? Indies. They had their online stores with people providing indie games.
I'm talking specifically.
How many AAAs did they actually have?
Right. Yeah. I was talking about disc releases. Yeah. AAAs, not known huge franchises, just not that many.
Yeah. They had like one or two each.
Yeah, you're talking Assassin's Creed.
Plus the exclusives.
Call of Duty, Battlefield. Madden, NBA.
They had like three or four between the two. They had like three or four, and then they had the exclusives for each. Mm-hmm. So when you add all that up, including the indies they had in the PSN store and the Xbox Arcade, whatever you want to call it, you get like, 100 games at release between the two?
Mm-hmm.
How many games did you have the generation before that? The 360?
On launch? A lot less, yeah, because the digital stores weren't even in existence.
Now, how long have you had your Steam account for?
At least 3-4 years, if not longer.
Yeah. And mine,
what about you, Stephen?
Mine, maybe a year, and it's really just to buy kid games for my oldest son to play.
Yeah. How many games do you have on your account that work on Linux?
I'm not at liberty to say.
I know.
I'm not asking how many did you play, just how many do you have.
Okay, all right. A lot. A lot, yes.
A lot, yes.
Yeah, I've got like, I want to say 15 or 20.
Okay. Now, what if I told you that if the Steam machines came out tomorrow, you would have over 650 games on release?
Yeah.
Available for potential purchase if you didn't already own them. Yes.
If you didn't already
own them. Right, right.
But you come from Windows. You come from Windows and you go to the store and you buy a Steam machine because, it's a Valve console. Let's buy it. You get home, you fire it up, and let's say you have like 500, 400 games in your account. You turn it on and you're most likely going to have at least 100 games ready to play.
Yep.
Just need to install them and there you go. A 100 game library which you can get paying only the console price.
Right.
And you're not even paying for licensing issues. You're not paying for Microsoft's...
You're not paying a subsidized cost for...
Prostitution habits, let's call it that.
You're not paying a subsidized cost for manufacturing and distribution and marketing and shipping and all that.
You're not paying the Sony and Microsoft tax. You're simply buying the hardware. Because that's Valve's mission statement, or at least it was if they haven't changed it yet. Because they like to do that every now and again. But yeah, that's their mission statement. It's a truly open platform in which you buy the hardware, it's yours. You buy a PS4, guess what? If you read the end user license agreement, it's not yours.
Nope.
Yep. Sony claims they still own the console that you purchase. And Microsoft, if they're not doing anything the sort already, I'm actually surprised, but I'm willing to bet they are. But yeah, when the Steam machines hit, people are going to you know, turn their noses and go like, but why would I buy that? I got that console there. It's got more games. Are you sure it's got more games?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, here's my question. If tomorrow the Steam console launched, or I decided to build one myself, what would you say are the couple games that I should definitely check out?
Let's see. XCOM, Enemy Unknown, and The Enemy Within expansion. What else? Civilization 5. Sid Meier's Civilization 5, if you like 4X kind of games. Let's see. Wasteland 2. Wasteland 2 is one of those Unity games that actually shows exactly how you can build an amazing-looking Unity game that works stupidly well in Linux.
Yeah, that guy over there.
Yeah.
That guy over there told me more than a little bit about that game. So I'm afraid to play that game. I'm not going to lie.
So as a quick aside, saying how Fallout 2 is your favorite game of all time, have you spent any time in Wasteland 2, and what can you say about it?
I tried not to play during Early Access because I actually sent an email to InXile Entertainment when they released the Early Access campaign on Steam. I'm like, oh, could you, you know, we're doing a podcast, we got so-and-so many viewers, downloaders. We'd like to play your game. Don't worry, we won't review it until it's actually out, till you finish your Early Access campaign. And they're like, okay, sure, here's the keys, when it's out, you guys can review it. Just make sure to send us a link after you're done. Okay. And I fired it up, as I usually do with most Early Access games, and I started playing, and I look outside, and hey, it's getting dark. This is a pretty good game. I probably shouldn't play it in Early Access because I'm bound to run into something that's going to ruin it for me. And so I'm just going to stop playing. I said that. The day after that, I woke up and I started playing the game. A couple hours later, I'm like, shit. I gotta go. Nope. Can't play it anymore. This repeated over the course of a couple of days. And when I noticed that I had 12 hours into the Early Access version. Yeah, I've played like 2 hours since the game actually released. I haven't had a lot of time because I got a job now. But yeah, I have, and I like what I'm seeing so far, and I want to keep playing it.
I also wanted to tell you, and I meant to send Ven the message to this too, but I had the opportunity to talk to a couple of developers from CD Projekt Red last week in person. And I did ask them about that Witcher 2 Linux port.
Oh, man. At which point,
emphasis on the air quotes there. Yeah,
one of the guys went from smiling to stone face, and the guy I was talking to just kind of put his head down and closed his eyes and sighed. And they started babbling some corporate speak at me, at which point I just kind of like, oh, okay, all right, okay. Because
marketing speak for, yeah. Don't tell them anything.
Yeah, I said, because, you know, I bought it for $4, and even then I was really.
So did I.
You know.
And then, a couple hours later, I was sending an email to Valve saying, I want my goddamn refund.
And out of all of the reviews, if you only had to watch one review, if you only had to watch one review of, and we'll get to the way they review the games in a second, but you need to watch any review that they've ever done and then watch their Witcher 2 review, because that is by far the best one, I think, ever.
Yes, it was by far one of the most concise reviews LGC has ever done.
It is.
Probably because I wasn't on the show that day. But
I know.
Yeah.
But
Sandy Martin.
I have a feeling that.
Sandy Martin.
Yeah. Sandy was there. I have a feeling that you would have been a fourth echoing voice in that void with that. Very concise. Concise is a very good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. The Witcher 2, I'm sorry. One of our usual listeners, Strider, he's the one behind the Lutris project. They just released a new version. You should go check it out, lutris.net. Oh, okay. It's a very good front end for games, emulators, and a bunch of other stuff. The head honcho behind Lutris, Strider, he keeps calling it a port. Personally, I can't. It's not a port. You're actually running the EXE from the Windows version, which is included in the VPFS file in the game folder. If you find a program, I think virtual programming actually offers a trial for something that lets you open the VPFS, and you can see the .exe file there. That's what's running the game. I'm sorry, that's not a port. If you're running the .exe, you're not porting anything. You're wrapping it.
Yeah. And ports tend to work for the most part. That's like the intention of it, right?
It's, again, that part is debatable.
Right.
But from the experience of wrapper games and native ports have worked considerably better. I mean, we have Civilization V as evidence of that. We have XCOM as evidence of that. We have so many. Actually, now we have a lot of really good AAA and AA games on Linux. Metro Last Light. Metro Redux, when it finally hits, I'm pretty sure that's going to work fine in Linux. And when you have, what do you have of examples of games that were wrapped in Wine or EON or DOSBox? What do you have of examples of those? You got The Witcher 2, which didn't work for 99% of people at launch.
Right.
Now, it apparently is working considerably better. It just, not for everyone. I mean, me personally, I'm on the open source drivers. It still doesn't work. And there are a lot of people with AMD cards on the open source drivers. And they still can't play the game. What else do you have? You had a strategy game that came out on Steam 3 months ago or so. I can't remember what it was called, but it was wrapped in Wine. If you go look in the Steam forums for that game, I honestly can't remember the name of it, but if you go look in the Steam forums, there are hundreds upon hundreds of people complaining in the Linux threads because the game doesn't work properly. Some people don't even have sound. Others just get texture flickering all over the place. It's not ideal, and supporting a wrapper, be it Wine or EON, is a pain in the bum for the people working on it. Each and every single person has a different hardware configuration. Even if it's just a stick around that's slightly faultier, it's an entirely different processor, something, that little hardware change, that difference, will dictate whether or not the game works. And if you have a native port, you have the OS itself as an abstraction layer between the hardware and the game. If you add an extra wrapper on top of that, then you have to start dealing with the issues that are running between the game and the wrapper and the OS and the hardware. You're introducing an extra layer. That's a bad move. A really bad move.
It's another unreliable person in an awful game of telephone. To put it lightly.
Very unreliable. And from what I read, EON is actually doing reasonably well from what people tell me. Honestly, I can't be bothered. I downloaded it 2 weeks ago from GOG because I still have my copy from GOG. I downloaded the Linux version from there, tried it out. It started like the screen went black and then poof. Ran it through the terminal, segmentation fault, core dump. Okie dokie then. Shift delete. Goodbye. So, no, I mean, the CD Projekt Red guys, and it's Vin actually says this. At this point, either The Witcher 3 is native, or they can just, you know, there's a door.
Yep. And it's too bad, because that would be a shining example of what could be done right for this platform, because those games are very, very beautiful, but I'm looking forward to seeing Metro Redux come out, because that is going to blow a lot of people away.
It is. I don't know if you guys actually played Metro 2033. I played a little bit of it. Honestly, I didn't play all the way through it because it was very, very poorly optimized. Even in Windows, I remember my little brother trying to play it on his laptop, and it was bad. It was really, really bad. But what they did now is, with the Metro Last Light engine, they improved it, they optimized it to the point where even me, in my 5-year-old laptop, using the open source drivers, I get 40 frames per second with the slider and the quality settings right down the middle. Medium graphics on a 5-year-old laptop, mid-range laptop at that. It's amazing, and if they do get Metro 2033 running that well, they're gonna get my money all over again.
Yeah, and that's another value. And when we were talking earlier about these developers, you know, with the Linux stretch goals and on all that BS, but ultimately, like what you said, if that developer pulled off a great Linux port, but not only had the optimization software for all sorts of different hardware, and they released another 5 games over the year, chances are you're going to buy every single one of those, knowing that they did good by the community, they did good by you as a gamer based on what you have. And then that's really that it's, I think it's going to take 1, 2, or 3, or 4 of those to really send a message, because all of a sudden you're going to see.
Well,
go ahead.
We already have 1, 2, 3, or 4 of those. I mean, you have Double Fine, you have Feral, you have Aspire, and you have Deep Silver.
Well, look.
And Frictional.
Well, you're
Frictional Entertainment.
Let me rephrase that. It's going to take a lot more people jumping on that bandwagon and really supporting them even harder than they are,
definitely,
in order to send the rest of the rest of the industry a message. It's like, yes, we're going to go here. And if you have a way to directly pay them or go through the way to make sure they get the most cut, then that's where the people are going to go.
At this point, it's only purchase a game after it's released on Linux. Do not pre-order a game. If you see the penguin on the pre-order page, as we've seen, that doesn't mean anything. So only buy the game when it's out for Linux. Because if you buy the game after it's out for Linux and you buy it on Linux, the guys that did the port or the guys that developed for Linux are the ones getting the money. If you, let's say you're not near your Linux PC and you're a friend's Windows PC and you're like, oh, that sale's going to end and I really want that game. So you buy it on Windows. You buy it on Windows, but you don't play it. So long as you play it on Linux throughout the first week, the Linux porters or developers, they're the ones who get the money. So you gotta keep those in mind. But we've actually had Ian Bullard from Aspire telling Ven to put his money back in his wallet because Ven was super excited that Borderlands pre-sequel was coming and he saw the trailer and was like, give me, I'm throwing money at the screen and nothing's happening. So he posted that on Twitter and Ian Bullard from Aspire comes back to him and is like, put that money back in your wallet. You only buy it when you see the penguin on the store. And Ven's like, I feel good tonight. Because even the developers themselves, and the guys from Aspire and the guys from Feral, I've never seen an actual team of developers so good at porting games to Linux, but AAA games. You have Borderlands pre-sequel coming to Linux at launch. You have Borderlands 2 coming to Linux as soon as it's ready. And it's looking pretty good.
Pedro, I'm behind in... I'm going to get Borderlands 2 for something, and it's going to involve a keyboard and mouse, okay? Because that's how I roll with first-person shooters. Until now, I did not know that it was going to be available for Linux at launch.
Borderlands...
I'm sorry, the pre-sequel.
Yeah, the pre-sequel.
Dor, you're going to have to get another...
They said either at launch or very close.
Dor, you're going to have to get another co-host for the latter half of the year, the latter part of the year, if that's going to be the case, because... Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow. Well,
the one thing I wanted to highlight in there, and that's the other reason why I like what you guys do on the show, is you guys make it very clear, vote with your dollar. Don't do the pre-order game. Wait till you see it. Wait till you see it in your hand, then give them the money. Voting with your dollar is one of the most important things we as Linux users can do. So I think that's maybe the best advice for anyone who wants to play games on Linux is just don't believe the hype. Wait till you see something
really
real.
Don't. It's at this point, if there's not a penguin in the Steam store, it's not worth your money. If it's a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign and they have a Linux stretch goal, it's not worth your money. If it's a Steam greenlight and they say they will have a Linux port if they get greenlit, guess what? It's not worth your vote. Stay away.
Right.
It's really not worth it.
Well, here's the other question I'm going to give you. What games, and this is a setup question, because like you said, developers say stretch goals, say it's coming, say it's going to be supported, say it's going to be delivered, say, you know, but hypothetically, let's just say everything you know right now, you believe is coming to Linux what are the one or two games you think that are coming that you're genuinely excited about?
Of the games I think, well, the games I'm sure I'm coming, let's put it like that. Let's see. Genuinely, I've grown a bit jaded over the years of using Linux. I'm far too cynical to actually believe that Carmageddon, the new one, is ever going to come to Linux.
Yes.
Because I backed that one on Kickstarter, and I'm pretty sure that was money down the drain. Well, one of the ones I was really the most excited for was Wasteland 2, and I got it. Now, I really want Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel. Definitely.
Speaking of, I have to ask you this because I haven't heard you guys talk about it, but have you played or what is your opinion on Super Meat Boy?
I have played Super Meat Boy. Honestly, I almost broke my controller playing it because the frustration got to a point where I had to physically let it out. And I had the controller in my hand and it started creaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to let it go. And then my girlfriend was sitting next to me at the time, and she picked up the controller, and she played it all the way, on the first go, she played it all the way through the end of the level, and I'm like, looking at her, how?
Wow.
How did you do that? And then she started, she finished Super Meat Boy, the first one, and she played through a bunch of the custom levels. Uh-huh. So, she enjoyed it. Me, personally, it's a bit too frustrating.
Yeah, I'm a huge, 2D, you know, platformer, classic platformer fans. Mega Man 2 is one of my favorite games of all time, so once I got to play that, I was just like, oh my god, I just absolutely love it. So, yeah, I thought I had to ask one of the LGC crew at least what they thought of that, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good rage platformer.
Yeah. That's very true.
That's the nicest thing I can say about
and
that.
And yes, have either mental restraint or an extra controller on hand just in case.
Well, yeah. Yep. I think that's maybe the most accurate, poignant description I've seen of a game in my life, because I did play that game for like literally 5 minutes and I said, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I am done. There's no way I have the time in my life to devote to this game.
Then you probably shouldn't play Another World.
Oh, that's an... Wait.
If you see that game coming up on Steam, just don't buy it.
Oh, no. I made the mistake of buying it on Android,
thinking,
well, I can play it while I'm at the line at the grocery store. I wanted to throw my phone. I did want to throw my phone. I did.
Yeah, that was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, I remember...
Phones are expensive.
I remember Ben posting something on Google Plus recently and just felt like, I got 12 minutes in and then that was it.
Yep. And I immediately replied, I commend you on your patience, because I literally gave up after 11 minutes.
Yeah, I think the Dalai Lama made it about 8. Great, great. You know, patience is definitely virtue. So speaking more about your show, now you guys, like as I spoke earlier, for those of you who are not familiar, when you're talking about grading, you know, art or, you know, games, anything like that, they usually have a scale. So, you know, 1 to 10, 3 out of 5 stars, but you guys have a very unique metric with which to grade these things. What is it? Tell me how. Actually, you know what? Let's go behind the curtain here. Explain it, and then if you can, give us an idea of how that came to be, because it's quite unique.
Well, you guys actually already mentioned it in one of your previous shows. It's the lawn chairs. And how or why did we decide to use that as a metric, I honestly can't tell you.
Okay.
And the chairs made a sign. The chairs themselves made us sign a confidentiality non-disclosure agreement.
Okay.
And we cannot discuss it. Let's just say we didn't choose them. They chose us.
There you go.
So, yes, it's the chairs. They have a mind of their own. They gave us 4 to deal with. And we deal with those 4 each and every single week.
So,
for all games.
Technically, the chairs outnumber you guys.
Yes.
That's scary.
Which is why they're so menacing.
It's part of the agreement.
Yeah.
It's why we can't have a 4th member on. It's just the 3 of us, because we actually considered bringing Sandy on full time, but we can't. The chairs don't let us. It can only be 3 at a time.
Okay. So yeah, it's from one, and it's not just that the games are rated from, well, you do get a final rating of either 1 to 4 chairs, but you guys go in depth and you also do it by categories.
Yep. We have Makes with the Working, which is how, let's say, if you buy a game on Steam, you download it, you push start. Does it start? Okay. That's three chairs right there. If it starts, but it doesn't, the resolution is broken and you have to look for the preferences file or the config INI and edit the resolution manually, it automatically gets ducted too. Now, if it doesn't have that, it actually plays fine and the resolution's good and you're playing for a couple of minutes and nothing weird happens, it doesn't crash, it gets four chairs. It makes with the working. One chair and makes with the working means that it's either constantly crashing or it didn't work at all. I'm looking at you right now, Painkiller.
Oh, yeah.
Hell and Damnation. Deadfall Adventures, a couple others, but yeah. After Makes With The Working, we have Shiny and Sounds. Now, Shiny and Sounds, as the name implies, it's about graphics and audio. Does the audio tickle your ear organs? Do the graphics look good to your eyes? Were there any major glitches? Anything you could... there was actually a game that Ben had some serious problems with the audio. It was Little Racer Street. that one got a pretty bad score from him, but he was the only one that it happened to. So each of these categories, we rated, again, on 1 through 4 chairs, all three of us. And they all have that degree of subjectivity.
Right.
Then after Shiny and Sounds, we have Controls. Most games like platformers and mostly platformers and racing games, games that don't involve precision, precise movements, we like to use our controllers. And if a game doesn't work with your controller and you're forced to play with a keyboard and mouse on, say, Super Meat Boy, it's going to get a pretty bad score.
Yeah.
Now, if it does work with a controller, okay, give it four chairs, or in my case, since my right hand isn't exactly symmetrical to my left hand, every now and again I can't give a game four chairs in the controls because they do not allow me to rebind the buttons on the controller, or they don't allow me to rebind the buttons on the keyboard. So that has yet another degree of subjectivity.
And then, real quick, when you say bind, you mean directly within the game itself without the assistance of external software, right?
If I'm paying money for a software, why should I go through the trouble of actually setting up a third-party tool to fix something that a lazy developer could not?
Yes.
Yeah. But then the later category is fun. Literally, is the game fun to play or not? And this is by far the most subjective of all our categories. And when you mission mash all those chairs together and you get the final score, we usually give out our final thoughts and whether or not the game, you know, the chairs usually reflect whether or not the game is worth the price. And most indie games nowadays are either $10, $15, or $20. They don't vary very much. And for most games, if most games we review were actually $10 a pop, they would probably get an extra chair on their score. Unfortunately, many of the games that get one chair final score are usually $20, $25 games. So yeah, it's something for the devs to keep in mind if they are not sure or they're getting bad reviews about their game. Mm-hmm. Cut the price down. Get some, you know, some goodwill from people.
Definitely. And yeah, like for instance, you know, we were talking about Wasteland. It's a full $59.99, but you look at
$39.99.
Oh, was it? Oh, my mistake.
Yeah, it is. Or the basic version is
$39.99. The basic, I was thinking about
the
limited or whatever.
Digital deluxe edition is a bit more.
There you go. Yeah. But you look at the history of those developers and the games they made, you're like, okay, I'm on board for this. Mm-hmm. But I've heard some great interviews with some indie developers where, you know, for instance, they will go to Valve and they're like, you know, like, what do you think? I mean, do you think I can get away with like $5? And then, you know, even Valve will be like, well, why don't we try 10? This is probably like a $10 game. Because yeah, I mean, if I see a game, for instance, on Steam, over $10, I really do stop and think more. Well, really, anything under 10 is more of just a click now. You know, just boom, boom. Yep, let's do it. Yeah. So I could see definitely what you guys are saying. if it was higher priced and it was somewhat mediocre, just the fact that you paid more for it, which means that they're expecting to earn more money, therefore they probably put more development into it, or at least they should have, then really it's more of a, it's even more, it's like an extra turn of the knife. So yeah, I can see.
Yep.
But I will say that, I mean, all three of the guys and then the guest hosts that we had over the length of the show, they really do go in depth. It's not just kind of like, they kind of give some, you know, BS two-line answer. I mean, they'll go into detail, each one of them. And all of you are, I would say, especially now, since you've been doing it so long, are very well-rounded in each of the areas. So I take a lot of, I give you guys a lot of credit for really honing that message. And I look to you guys every week to really, because I mean, you see, especially with, I mean, you're talking about digital distribution. It's not just a game a month. Mm-hmm. You're being thrown so much stuff all the time. And then when you're talking about the sales or in like the new Humble Bundle, I mean, just all sorts of stuff all the time. If you can go back and search and see what these guys thought of it, that's a good, honest answer as to what three everyday guys really thought about the game. Not only just their opinion, but they tested on multiple different types of hardware and went into talk about those categories individually. So it is very valuable in that respect. And I thank you guys for doing what you do.
Hey, it's our pleasure. And at this point, we try our best to be honest because the market is getting so flooded with crap.
Yeah.
Most games coming out nowadays are Unity, my first Unity games. It's someone got the free Unity editor. They put something together and hey, let's go on Steam. That's why games like Earth Year 2066, it's one of the rare occasions that a game was actually pulled from the Steam store, was a my first Unity. It was called Earth Year 2066, and it was horrible. If you actually, there's a game critic called Jim Sterling.
Yep.
He's one of the actual game critics that I absolutely respect. He has a very down-to-earth opinion when it comes to the gaming industry. You should totally watch his thing. Just a bit of a plug to him. But he actually made a video for it on his channel on YouTube. That video got taken down. And then he made another one about his first one being taken down. And then the developer of the games banned him from the Steam forums, and he started banning everyone that would speak ill of the game in the Steam forums. It was blown way out of proportion, and the guy was eventually banned from Steam altogether. So some people say he's actually back and he's put up her other games on Steam, but there is no confirmation for that. But yeah, most games are bad. It's the big problem with Linux right now is that, granted, we have awesome AAA, AA, even single A games. We have them. But those 650 games that we have on Linux right now, most of them are horrible.
Well, kind of like you said earlier, like the Atari back in the day.
Yes.
There were very good games on it, but there were some horrible, wretched, waste of time games.
Yeah, and that's what people are scared of right now in the industry is that, much like what happened to the Atari 2600 and E.T. causing the crash of the video game market back in 1982, people are seriously worried that that will happen because Steam just opened the floodgates and let everyone who has a publisher just publish their games. Oh, you don't have a publisher? Go through Greenlight. Everything that's on Greenlight's getting approved. No voting. The voting system's a joke. There's no voting going on. People just, okay, there's a new batch of Steam Greenlight titles. Oh, look, more crap. Good. So, and the crap is actually drowning out the truly, genuinely good games. Not too long ago, when you saw an indie game that actually, people talked about that indie game, okay, then this is bound to have something interesting. This is bound to have that one mechanic that was missing from video games, and this guy nailed it. It's probably good. And yeah, innovation was happening in the indie market. Nowadays, the indie market is people looking for cash grabs.
Yeah. And the definition is becoming blurred. It's not just a couple of guys in an apartment for 18 months. It's maybe a small, when you're talking about, like, you know, these indie developers making a deal, exclusive deal with Microsoft developing for the Xbox One, now it's a team of 50 people, you know, or more. But you make a good point that the barrier for entry as far as developing games, especially with development environments such as Unity, and I'm not trying to bash on them, but you know, they're good games have been made with it. Maybe not most of them, but some. And but yeah, the barrier for entry as far as making games with those pre-made environments is very low, and you're having people with no passion walking in literally for a cash grab, saying, well, they're going to buy it anyway because it's only $3. Who cares? I sell 30,000 of them. I just made 90 grand. I don't care. I already have three more ideas down the pike, and they're going to buy those too. So yeah, and you're right. Unfortunately, as more and more of that gets, especially we're seeing mobile, because oh my god, any games gets. I mean, take Flappy Bird for instance. Can you think of Door? We also have an Android show on the network. Door. How many Flappy Bird clones have you seen and or brought on that show?
Oh, how many have I ignored, you mean?
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. I mean, just hundreds. Immense. So, yeah, as a pro and con, yeah, you have a lot more games coming out, but the really good gems are being drowned out, just the fact that they're in a sea of, you know, tens of thousands all the time.
Yeah.
Which is why your show is even more valuable, my friend.
Yeah, again, we're... We're looking to provide an honest opinion, and if our honest opinion every now and again involves dropping a couple of F-bombs, a couple of S-bombs, a couple of C-bombs, they're going to be dropped, and if we say them, developers probably had it coming.
The one thing I'd highly encourage everyone to do, I don't care to be quite, I don't care if you're born again Christian, Muslim, hey, Orthodox,
whatever. You didn't consult with me before all this.
I encourage people, worst case scenario, go to youtube.com/LinuxGamecast. Go to LinuxGamecast.com, read the reviews. If you don't want to hear the cussing, read the reviews. And then when you're done, go to LinuxGamecast.com/podcast and click the affiliate link. Show them that you're doing this. Show them that you're reading them. Show them that you're using what they're saying as weight in your purchases by backing them up. Because I'm not going to lie, every time anybody now tells me anything about a game, the first thing I do is I go to Google and I type site:LinuxGamecast.com/ and the game to see if you guys have said anything about it. And if you do say anything about it, I tell people, here's a review. These guys know what they're talking about. I am a hack. I don't know nothing. I know, I know, oh, pretty colors, but I don't know the actual gameplay. I don't know the mechanics. I don't know how well it works. I don't know how well it builds. I don't know how well it controls with a game controller. I don't know none of this. I just know that game there looks good.
And hey, that's not a bad thing. I wish I was that oblivious, let's call it that. I know that's not the right word, but let's go with that. I wish I was that oblivious when it comes to games, because I'm far too jaded at this point. It's not even pretty. I look at a game, and unless I get immersed, unless it immediately grabs my attention for one reason or another, unless I get really into it, I start picking at it. I start pushing, pulling, see where the tears start to break, where the bugs start coming in. It's taken my enjoyment out of gaming, actually. 2 years. It was just 2 years, and I went from a guy that just liked games to a cynic.
Well, and I will say that once you sort of do have that peek behind the curtain and you understand what goes into it, and once you start to reach a certain level of expectation... Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about any sort of media whatsoever, I mean, you know, books, films, whatsoever, if it's not engaging enough, like within the first, I want to say, what is it, like, even for ads, it's like 90 seconds or less. It's just like, you're tuning out. So they really do need to be grabbed. But yeah, are you still in Portugal? Yeah, so well, I would say here in the States, we do have that car wreck mentality where, as I mean, I'm thinking of like what's an awful game? Like have you ever played Deadly Premonition?
I've heard of it.
But I know it's on 360. I can't remember if it's on PC or not, but that's a classic example of this game is so bad and it's such an awful experience. I just have to see how it keeps, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to go get another case of beer, honey. I'm staying here all day. Like, that type of thing. It's just that awful. So, but you need to balance it. Like, you can't reward those developers if it's that awful. I mean, if it's jokingly awful for the sake of, like, nostalgia or, like, throwback, like, it's a joke, then I kind of get it. Mm-hmm. But then there are just phones that are flat bad that deserve no attention that need to be put aside.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. If you're going to fail at a video game, fail miserably.
Right, yeah.
Go all the way. Do everything you want to do, and if it's going to crash, it's going to crash and burn. Go out with a bang. Because mediocrely bad games, those are forgotten. Mediocrely good games, those are forgotten. Horrendously bad games, people remember those.
Yes, they will be remembered
really,
forever.
Really, really good games, some people do, some people don't, but if you really want them, be known in the video game industry, do it like John Romero did. Make Daikatana.
Oh my god.
It's bad.
I bought that retail, that I'm bad. Pretty sure, well, at least within the first week of launch, because I was big into land gaming back then. Even us who were playing Quake 2 all the time going, what is this pile of crap?
It was so horrible.
Awful. Yeah. Wow. Cool.
But yeah, if, again, we make no promises. We make no excuses. What we do is we at LGC, me, Ven, and Jordan, we give you the beans. We give you what we think of the game. You may not like it. You may disagree with it. Hey, we have a hate mail section. Send us your hate mail. Tell us why you disagree. We actually enjoy the feedback. It's actually the best part of our show. Personally, I think it's the hate mail. Granted, the review is by far the most useful, but the hate mail is my favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
Because it's that part where we actually get to interact with the people that are watching us and listening to us. And I like that. I really like that. Mm-hmm. And hey, if you kick us a few shackles while you're on the website, you know, the podcast page has some donation links and some affiliate links for Amazon. We appreciate that.
Definitely.
It helps the show.
And as few or frequent as those do come in, I can speak as a podcaster too, those do help with a variety of issues when it comes to this. And it ultimately shows, it's just another interaction piece from your audience to you saying, hey, we appreciate it. So it is good. Let me ask you a little more thoughtful question here. And this is just kind of like the whole Linux gaming landscape. But seeing as you guys are about 110 episodes in, weekly, it's heading up to, well, a little over 2 years now. But let's mm-hmm. say 3 to 5 years ago, you as a gamer and as a Linux user, what did you think that the landscape would be 3 to 5 years in the future, aka now? And as of right, as a second part, what do you think it's going to mm-hmm. be from now, another 3 to 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, 3 years ago, there was already talks of Steam possibly coming to Linux. So let's go to the 5 year. 5 years ago, and I looked at Linux as a gaming platform, and I'm like, either those humble guys actually start releasing those bundles like monthly, or at least twice a month. It's not gonna go very well. I mean, I loved Linux, I really did, but if I wanted to actually play games, and Ven kind of calls me a heathen for this, I had to use Windows. There weren't a whole lot of games on Linux. There were a few that I truly enjoyed, like Sacred Underworld, Neverwinter Nights, the first few Humble Bundles had Burning Retribution.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Something Steel Burning Retribution. Yeah. I can't remember the name of the game right now, but it was pretty good. I liked those. But what about everything else? What about Oblivion? What about Skyrim? Skyrim wasn't out back then, but, you know, those kinds of games. Fallout 3. I didn't like Fallout New Vegas. I'm one of those people that preferred Fallout 3 over New Vegas.
Why? Yes, because you have taste and expectations.
But, yeah, honestly, 5 years ago, I didn't think I used Linux for everything else but gaming. Then Valve's like, yeah, the Linux is something we're considering, and I'm like, oh boy. And then they released the beta, and I immediately, at the time I was working for Fuduntu, I was part of the Fuduntu development team. It was a Linux distro, it was based on Fedora, mm-hmm. It eventually got so big we had over 100,000 users concurrently installed, and we could not afford the hosting price for those many people downloading updates and downloading new software from our repo, because we were moving on a slow month. We were moving around 120 terabytes.
Wow.
On a slow month. On release month, we could easily get triple that.
Wow.
So, yeah, eventually the distro got so big and we had no means to keep it going, so eventually it died. But yeah, I was with Fudentu at the time, and I sent an email to Valve saying, hey, I know I'm not in the beta, but I got the Steam client running, and I can play games on Linux. I don't want my account to get banned, but I need to test this thing because of our operating system. And they're like, oh, you could have just said so. And they sent me an invite to the beta at the time. So at that point, and I started seeing the list grow with each passing day, new games coming along, I'm like, okay, I don't need Windows anymore. And that's the point where I dumped my Windows partition. It's cold turkey. Gone.
Yeah. It does take one of those, like, big, like, everybody has their one big thing as far as why they don't use Linux. And those are slowly being just knocked down one by one.
Yep. And for me, it was just, there's a Steam client working on Linux now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need Windows anymore. And to the second part of your question, 3 to 5 years from now, assuming the Steam machines actually do release next year, 3 years from now, we're going to see people actually noticing that they already have a lot of games on Steam, and there's a console that can play a great deal of those games. The rest, they can just stream from their PC if they really want to play them on their console. And new games are coming out, and it has a bunch of sales going on all throughout the year. Constantly 75% off, 50% off, 25% off, 33% off. There's always a sale going on Steam. In fact, if you open up the Steam client right now, there are 86 games on sale at this point.
Wow. I bought 7 of them earlier. Yeah. I'm not gonna...
And people are going to start, okay, so why am I paying $60 for a PS4 or an Xbox One game when I can get that very same game on SteamOS for $30?
Yeah.
And people are going to start realizing that. And then Sony and Microsoft are going to start realizing that. And you're going to see there's going to be, I'm hoping, this is me hoping, wishful thinking.
This is your vision of the future. I get it.
Yeah, it's... They're going, 5 years from now, Valve is going to be tied up with Microsoft and Sony. If Sony doesn't fail in the meantime, because the PS4 division is actually doing pretty good, but the rest, they reported a 2.8 or 2.7 billion loss.
Last year.
$2 billion loss. So, yeah, maybe they'll pick up again, maybe not, we'll see. But if they do manage to get back up on their feet and actually maintain a presence in the market, Valve, Microsoft, and Sony are going to be neck to neck. And personally, Valve has the open console.
Right.
Valve has the open everything. And that's not just good for the console environment itself, because it's more competition, so it's good for everyone. But it's also good for the PC, because guess what? Linux... SteamOS is based on Linux. Linux is a desktop operating system. Linux is a PC operating system. It's going to benefit everyone using Linux at that point. We're going to have a library bigger than anything. It's great. For me, the future looks great. I know that there's that thing in the Linux community about the year of the Linux desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I don't think there will be a year of the Linux desktop. It's not going to be a year that it's all going to happen. It started happening last year in February when the Steam client for Linux went gold. And it's going to keep going until Valve is at that same point where Microsoft and Sony are when it comes to, you know, distributing games and having their own platform and everything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot about the gaming industry. I'm a very layman's guy when it comes to the industry as a whole, but it seems to me that, yes, I agree. Steam just has to not mess up. Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't go at a fast rate. Don't go at a crazy rate. Don't overpromise. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep making progress. And I can't see in like 3 years or so how this wouldn't be on people's wish list for the holiday season. Mom, I want my Steam machine, and you don't have to really buy me a lot of games. I already got, like, you know, 50, 60 games, Mom. Yeah. All I need is the box.
You know those games you bought me for Steam? I can play those on the console.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm saving you money, Mom. You're welcome.
Right.
But I think...
But yeah, you can literally go out today, build yourself a Steam machine for the same money you would spend on a console, and instead of having to spend another 50, 60, whatever amount of dollars console games are being sold at these days, you already have an entire library that you can play.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. You don't have to spend any more money on games. If you... Okay, let's say the Steam machines were already out. People were going out to the store and say, I want to buy a console. I need my PC for work. I don't want any games installed on it. I need my PC for work, so I'm going to buy a console and just play on that. The Steam machines were out. People look at the Steam machine and say, how many games do I have on my Steam account? They take out their phone, look on the Android client. Oh, I got all these games. Wait, I got 60 games on Steam that run on SteamOS. And I have to pay to even get one extra game on top of the $400 I'm already spending on another console.
Yes, right.
Okay, we're going with the Steam machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to be on their Steam machine, and they're just browsing the store, and they're like, oh, hey, this game's on sale. They spend another $3, and they have another game to play.
Because in my experience, I worked gaming retail in the past. People usually have two big motivators for buying games. Either they're hardcore, they love that developer, they love everything they've done in the past, and they're just going to buy it regardless.
Those have their mindset, and you can't change their
right.
minds.
Right. Or it's whatever I have in my pocket, and that's what I'm buying. That's it. So either way, I'm talking like opposite ends of the spectrum. Both of those types of gamers and ultimately types of consumers are really going to be handled and taken care of very well within that environment. Because go ahead.
It's going to get to that point where Valve is going to be enough of a threat to Microsoft and Sony where they have to start competing with them.
Right.
Valve will become a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
If it isn't one already, because they hold a monopoly on the PC, so they're not a big boy. They have no idea what they're doing.
So, speaking of big boy, this is a fantastic transition. Speaking of Valve becoming a big boy, within that 3 to 5 years, do you think Valve is actually going to learn how to count to three?
No.
Like, if you had
honestly,
to put money
I don't
on it.
Think so.
No?
No. Honestly, I don't think so, because how long has Half-Life 2 Episode 3 been promised for? How long has Half-Life 3 been... It's not even hype, because Valve themselves are tight-lit.
Right.
It's people building up their expectations, and, oh, it's probably going to be amazing, and, oh, it's going to be good. They can't release it. This is my opinion.
That's a good point. Go ahead. Yeah.
They can't release it because they can't live up to that
no.
hype.
It could be the best game in the world. Hands down, people are just going to tear it apart.
Yeah. Now, there is the counter-argument to my way of thinking, which is they did something similar with Half-Life 2. They took forever to release it, and then it came out, and it was amazing. It melted people's eyes out of their sockets. And back in 2004, that game was...
Very heartbreaking, yeah.
Yeah, but I honestly don't think that Half-Life 2 Episode 2 came out in 2007, 8?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
7? Somewhere around there. It's been 7 years, or 6 years as the case may be, of hype, of speculation, of people claiming to have exclusive screenshots, of people claiming this, people claiming that, which is all lies because Valve hasn't said anything about it, if it even is in development. I think they got to a point where, okay, we need to finish this thing, we kind of teased the Borealis at the end of episode mm-hmm. 2, so we probably should give some closure in that regards, but then the speculation and the hype. It wasn't technically hype because it was just people doing
right,
it
yeah.
for themselves.
Fan-generated hype, yeah.
Yeah. So they started thinking, okay, so how can we not fail their expectations? And I think they're like, you know what? We have a client that distributes games. Let's focus on that. Oh, hey, those guys made a cool game, Portal. Yeah, let's make a sequel of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, that game we released back whatever
1983
was doing pretty good. Let's let's release a new one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hey, Counter-Strike. We haven't made a Counter-Strike in a while. Counter-Strike Global Offensive. Oh, the Blizzard guys don't want the Dota rights? Okay, we'll buy those. Mm-hmm. Dota 2.
Yeah,
they're doing their best to avoid touching Half-Life. And I think they're probably doing the best thing they can, because if they actually release an Episode 3 or Half-Life 3 or whatever you want to call it, they can't live up to the hype.
They could potentially taint their brand. If they're going to do it, it's going to, in my opinion, much like what I'm getting into, if it's going to happen, and I'm saying it will happen eventually, but they're smart enough, and Gabe is smart enough to realize that they have to first have success with their current endeavors and platforms. So I'm talking like maybe within the first, I'm talking like release, hard release, 2 years after the Steam OS, like actual Steambox platform becomes successful. They can tease at it a year in if they're just like wildly successful, saying this is going well. By the way, look what's on the horizon. And then that's just going to cause sales to just flood in.
Yeah, and okay, they'll probably, going back to your question, they will count to three. Left 4 Dead 3 will likely happen. Team Fortress 3 probably will happen. Dota 3, I'm not so sure, but yeah. Left 4 Dead 3 and Team Fortress 3 will probably be a thing.
Yeah, I can't wait for Left 4 Dead 3 would be at the top of my list. Assuming Portal 3 and, you know, Half-Life 3 are way be long gone. Like you know, several years. Left 4 Dead 3, I would go nuts over. Also, even though GO came out recently, I would love to see a new updated Counter-Strike in the next maybe two or three years, because I don't know about you, but you know, back in the day, I'm talking like, here's what I used to do. Literally, I was a huge LAN gamer at the time. I worked a job in a produce department in a grocery store. I would play all night, wake up just in time to like sleep 2-3 hours, go to work, drive home 15 minutes on my hour lunch break just to play for 30 minutes, then drive back to work, get home with my case of Mountain Dew, my bag of chips, get a couple burritos, and just get right back on, because it was that good.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think they should release a third Portal. Portal 2 was pretty good. It was not as good as the first one, and I think if they release a third one, it's going to be even worse.
They can't just do a simple continuation of the story. There needs to be a groundbreaking use of the mechanics.
Something to shake it, and if they don't do it properly, it's going to kill that series.
Right, because I mean,
right now, the series is doing pretty good.
Yes. Without spoiling it for anything for those who haven't played it. Yeah. I mean, if you haven't played it, just by all means, hit stop now. Go buy both games and play them. But if you look at those, they really are two halves of the coin, because you had the experience within an certain environment and then the experience outside of the environment. So, I agree with you if they are to do it. But here's the thing. It's not like they're going to hire another developer to run with the story. If they're going to do it, you know damn well they're going to do it right. Or you have to put their faith. You have to put your faith in them.
It's
that
Valve.
Do it right.
They've been doing pretty good. I won't disagree with that. But this is just me again. Mm-hmm. Jaded. They should not do Portal 3. Do Left 4 Dead 3. Do Team Fortress 3. Do something else, an entirely new IP. Go nuts. Just leave Portal alone. Because the first Portal, I went into that game thinking, okay, it's going to be a game about solving puzzles with portals. And I got that. But I got a little more than that. Because it's not just a game about solving puzzles with portals. It's a game with the darkest humor you could possibly ever find in a video game. GLaDOS was an amazing character. And for the most part, you only hurt her. And it got to the end of the game, and you got to kill her. It was a genius 2-hour-long game, because you could finish that game in 2 hours or even less. It was absolutely amazing. And then Portal 2 came along, and granted, the humor was still very much there, but instead of just solving puzzles with portals, they introduced a whole new layer, which was, in this very detailed map, find the one spot you can put the portal.
Yes.
And you will need to find it, because otherwise you cannot progress.
Yep. And
the final sequence, if you haven't played to the end of Portal 2, put a bucket in your head, start banging at it. And the final sequence, before I figured out that you could put a portal on a moon, it took me a while. I died a couple of times. It's another...
yeah. it's worthwhile once you get there. Okay. For those who are watching video, I'm taking my hands off my ears. You can quit banging the bucket. Yeah, you're fine.
You can pull out the bucket now.
But you bring up another great point, too, because when I think of the games that I've really loved in the last 5 years, or even, well, I would say the last 5 years, because this is when it's become really important. And I'm thinking of games like Portal. I'm thinking of games like Super Meat Boy, like I mentioned earlier, and especially Borderlands. Mm-hmm. That sense of humor is literally another character.
It is.
In the game. It's a whole,
an entirely new element.
Right, it's another element that because, I mean, literally, if you think of Borderlands as a franchise, if you take that sense of humor out, it's a completely different experience. It's just, if it was just a straight, I mean, it would be worse than Fallout, but it would be like Fallout. It would be a post-apocalyptic first-person shooter with no fun. I mean, yeah, shooting, you know, skags after a while, sure, but that sense of humor and that dialogue is just second to none.
Yeah, the sense of humor is part of the charm that keeps bringing people back to me personally, the first Borderlands. Every now and again, I fire it up and I go around for a little bit. Until I start realizing that, yeah, this is more fun with people and there's no one left playing it.
Yes.
Okay. But yeah, those games were very much a co-op thing, the Borderlands series. And I'm really hoping for Borderlands 2, and there will be some LGC Players episode of Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel of this.
Oh, man.
There's no doubt about that.
I cannot wait to see that. That's going to be amazing. Well, Door, I know we're kind of, we're going on almost 2 hours here. What else do you have for Pedro before we go ahead and sign off here?
Oh, well, at the end of the day, drink.
Take a shot.
Take a shot.
I'm out of whiskey, sorry. I had to drink it all.
I think it's safe to say the health of the Linux gaming front is becoming healthier. It might not be the best it is right now kind of thing, but it's definitely on the upward swing. I want to personally thank you, Ven, and even Jordan, for, to be very frank, for educating me on what goes into Linux gaming, what's important in the Linux gaming, what to look out for in the Linux gaming scene, and to be honest, who to support. To me, that's one of the biggest things I think I learned from listening to you guys. And what I really hope is developers try to go out of their way, at least when they do a good product, and support you guys back. That to me would be the coup de grace of it all coming together and making sense kind of thing.
Sort of already have that with people like Frictional. They give us keys. They have a new game coming for Linux. They send us keys. Feral, they gave us access to their site's press area. We can just log in. We got their entire Linux library, which is currently just XCOM. But we can download it, review it. So yeah, we already have a bit of those, but we need more.
Right.
In order to provide that opinion, we need more.
Very good point.
Yeah, I definitely think you guys are on the right track, the right angle. You guys, dare I say, got to keep pounding away at it.
Interesting choice of words.
go figure.
Yes. Well, Pedro, I got one last question for you, and then this is important. But you guys collectively are known as the Cocaine Voltron, for those of you who don't know. And if you don't know, by all means, please go to please go watch the show. Please listen to the show. Consume the show however you can. Like, if you're bootlegging an audio signal of this show off of a tethered phone somewhere on an Amish, you know,
Pringles can.
Right, yeah, exactly. Making that Wi-Fi antenna go. Then by all means, just read it in text so you don't hinder your religious beliefs. But within the Cocaine Voltron, what piece are you, what piece is Ven, and what piece is Jordan?
Here's the thing. There are four pieces of the Cocaine Voltron.
Okay.
Chat Room.
It's me, it's Ven, it's Jordan, and it's Chat Realm.
There you go.
The trolliest of trolls. The people that stay up on a Saturday night to watch us speak into microphones because they have nothing better to do. Either that, or they really like what we do. Honestly, I can't understand it either way, but okay! So, people will actually stay up to watch us rave and cuss about video games. Why not? We try to put on a good show for them. And to answer your question, I'm the cut piece.
Okay.
Ven's the cut piece, Jordan's the cut piece, and Chat Realm is the core cut piece.
Okay, I'll take that.
You asked, man.
I did ask, and I got an answer, and I'm satisfied. So, you spoke earlier about supporting the show if you happen to like it, you know, a couple shekels here and there. Can you speak a bit about the website and any specific URL which we can go find for donations and or regular contributions?
Yeah, you can go on over to linuxgamecast.com/podcast. You have the links to our podcast video, SD video, HD video, SD audio. You can download those. If you like what we do and you like our stuff, go ahead and push those Amazon links. It won't cost you anything extra. We just get a little bit of a cut of your purchase. And finally, we have our Donato buttons, as Jordan calls them. They're, you can donate a one-time donation of any value you want. And then we have the recurring donations, which are the ones that actually help bring the show to us because they pay for hosting, they pay for new equipment, because, hey, we're dealing with PCs. Every now and again, something's going to break.
Yes.
So the recurring donations are the most important ones for us. You can donate either $3.50 a month, $3.50 if you're some sort of sea monster, or you can get us $10 a month, and with $10 a month, you get access to our show notes. You can read the show notes all throughout the week, keep up to date with the stuff that's going to be in the podcast. You also get access to some exclusive content. There are some videos which are not on our YouTube channel and they're not on the website. You only get access to those if you're a 10-month a dollar recurring donator. So, yeah, linuxgamecast.com/podcast, or just push the contact button on the nav bar. It's easy enough. You can also stop by the forums. We talk a lot about Linux games and everything tangentially related to it. If you like that kind of stuff, go on over. There are not as many swear words, so if you're sensitive to that,
there you go.
Won't be an issue.
Cool. All right. Well, Pedro, thank you so much once again for agreeing to be on the show. And I just want to reiterate all that stuff we said earlier about Jordan on the show. It was only true.
Mm-hmm. We
no, I consider this like I'm collecting you guys. I have you down first, then I'm eyeing Jordan. In a more apropos analogy here, mm-hmm. You were the first mini boss. We'll get Jordan on the show, and then once we've conquered the most of you, then we're on to Ven. How about that?
I'm pretty sure you just insulted me at some point in that rant there, but okay. Sure, let's go with that.
Well, that I didn't mean at all. Like I said earlier, my whiskey I made disappear during the show. So. Oh, and
yeah, don't worry.
And in your opinion, in your factual opinion, all those beers that Ven is posting photos on Google+, he's not actually drinking those, right? He's just collecting them on a wall somewhere.
Yeah. If that helps you sleep at night, sure. He's just collecting.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Let's go with
that. All right. Okay. 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 No, the guy has a good taste from what he's posting on there. I do appreciate it. Cool.
No, he. I drink a lot. Portuguese guy. We drink. It's kind of what we do. Not as much as the Irish, but then again, Ven drinks a whole lot more than the Irish.
He's German. Yeah, he takes it.
Yeah, I was about to say. You're talking to an Irishman and an Irish German. So yeah. we're in good company here.
Yep.
Yes. All right, cool. Well, Dor, what do we have for the folks before we go ahead and sign off here?
Nothing really. Just want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for their downloads. And I want to thank Pedro for staying up till now past 5 a.m. in the morning his time. That alone...
past 6.
Well, that alone, I should shut up and just donate.
Hey. My pleasure. Again, whenever you want me on, just let me know beforehand. I'll make time for you guys. I like your show. I really do. And if you want to talk about gaming, hey, I'll be happy to.
Hey, if we're going to make it regular, yeah, we'll definitely have you on. But then we're going to have to, we'll have to have some special episodes where we accommodate your time schedule every now and then. Because I'm all about keeping it equal.
Yeah, you guys would have to get up really early in the morning. No, okay, I'll make time. Whenever you guys want me on, whenever there's some gaming stuff you want to discuss, just let me know. I'll make time for you guys.
Fantastic. We appreciate it. All right. So, yeah, you heard all the stuff about the Linux Gamecast. If you guys are fans of the show, please go give them anything you can. Because I got to tell you, especially from a podcaster's point of view, like I said, it's just another point of contact from the audience to us, letting us know that you do appreciate it. And there aren't costs involved, so we do appreciate that. Speaking of costs involved, I would say Door, correct me if I'm wrong, but especially in the past 90 days, has probably been the biggest 90 days or the biggest quarter of the year as far as Podnuts directly benefiting from our Amazon.com affiliate link, correct?
It goes up and down in waves. Typically, Christmas is the big time because it's Christmas. But yes, there has been a definite influx.
And we really do want to thank every single one of you who are using the podnuts.com/Amazon link, because it doesn't cost you a penny more than what you would pay for those items automatically. You just use that link. We get a little percentage of anything you're already going to buy on Amazon. Me personally, when I'm using either Chrome or Firefox, I just have a little link in my the link address bar there I enabled. I just have a little Podnuts icon that takes me right to podnuts.com/Amazon. I make all my purchases as normal, and you know that the network is benefiting it from a little bit. We really do appreciate that. For instance, some of those some of the money generated from that we've been using to purchase and acquire prizes, which we've been giving out in some of the shows like Android App Addicts recently. We just gave out a Sony smartwatch. We have another prize coming up. Door, what is that?
The first one was a Sony smartwatch 2, and then now we're going to be giving away a LG G watch.
Ooh, very cool. Very cool. All right, so yeah, thank you everyone for using podnuts.com/Amazon. We really do appreciate it. If you'd like to send in a voicemail to the show, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. We will be playing those on a show. Door and I are planning a kind of clear the shoe. I know I've been saying this the last couple episodes. We really need to sit down and clear out all the emails and voicemails we do have in one episode. That'll be coming in the next couple weeks. Really do appreciate all the correspondence. It's got backed up a little bit. We're on our way to getting that taken care of. If you do want to send an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxforrestofus.com. We will answer those emails accordingly as we can as they come in, and we'll definitely read most of them as much as we can on the show. And to wrap up, please don't forget our good friend Jonathan Nado at the Accessible Computing Foundation. You can go to the acf.tk. It is no longer the acf.co, the acf.tk, to check out the Accessible Computing Foundation. He runs that foundation, which, of course, gets technology into the hands of those people who would otherwise be left behind, those people with disabilities. And speaking of making that transition smooth for those folks, he also has his own Linux distribution, Sonar Linux, which you can find at sonargnulinux.com, which is now based off of Manjaro Linux, which, of course, is a derivative of Arch, making it a lot more accessible for basically everyone. But he goes the extra mile, putting in extra software to make it accessible for people who are blind. He also has special fonts for people who are dyslexic, because there's studies that have proven if they read certain fonts, they can assimilate text better. A lot of fantastic software within that distribution. And if you'd like to support either one of those, please go to the acf.tk. You can sign up to be a regular contributor for as little as $2 a month. I myself have been a regular contributor for about 2 years now, and I know that when I see that PayPal notification that my money is going to a fantastic cause benefiting a lot of people. So go there. They actually are running a new program where you can be put in contact to donate hardware directly to someone within that community that is in need. So think of, you know, us, like right now, I probably have 4 or 5 boxes in my garage I could just, you know, give off to somebody who would be using it a lot more than I am using, holding down whatever table they're sitting on in there. So head over to the acf.tk, check them out. They're doing a world of good, and you can help that cause. And in closing, thank you very much again for being Podnuts listeners, Linux to Rest of Us supporters. We do appreciate everything. We've got a lot of great content coming into the end of the year. And please do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.